Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My nieces tell me all the time the 80s and 90s are back, Auntie Amy, and that definitely is a throwback song, but I love it. It was one that I remember very vividly from when I was a lot younger, when I was a kid. One of those songs we used to sing at the top of our lungs with friends. It's after, that means I'm old, but it's okay. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Thanks so much for hanging out with us from the After Hours Super Secret Pillow Fort. And if you don't know why I'm calling it that, well, I've lined the room with as many pillows as possible for two reasons. Number one, trying to mute any echo or bounce back from my voice hitting the wall. So I'm trying to explain this as easy as possible, or simply as possible, I should say. Yeah, so when you're in a room that doesn't have padded walls or curtains, or let's say carpet, and I'm in a room with hardwood floors and not a whole lot on the walls, the sound does what any sound wave does. It bounces back at you, which can create an echo. Do you guys remember during the pandemic when a lot, if not all, TV and radio hosts were working from their own homes? And because of kind of the scramble and having to figure out where to do a show or where to connect in a way that would give you either, you know, if you're talking wireless, make sure that you would have uninterrupted internet service, or just trying to get away from people who are doing whatever else in the house, right? You very often would hear people who were in their kitchens or in a bathroom. I swear, we had one anchor on the air. Ryan, I don't know if you remember. We had one anchor on the air who it sounded like he was in his bathroom because he lived in a very small apartment, and his girlfriend at the time, wife now, was sleeping, and he was doing early morning updates, and it sounded like he was in the bathroom. Well, in order to prevent us sounding like we're in the bathroom, I've got pillows lining the walls, but also pillows stacked up on the wall in front of me with the desk where I'm doing the show. So we're calling it a pillow fort, courtesy of Ryan. That was his idea. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, first show back after Christmas. I could tell you my schedule moving forward, but it's kind of convoluted because of travel and everything else. So just know that I'll be back on Sunday and Monday nights. So working this week 17 in the NFL, as we try to sort through some of the different playoff scenarios and implications, a week that started on Christmas Day with a doubleheader. So the Ravens are now in charge of their own fate atop the AFC North. They could potentially win a second consecutive North title. They've got three wins in a row, as the Steelers have three losses in a row. And Ryan, if you want, you can pull up that Mike Tomlin, Russell Wilson, because this is rough. I mean, they're still sitting on 10 wins. They've obviously clinched a playoff spot in a division that was real tough last year. Hasn't been quite as tough this year, but in which they didn't even have their starting quarterback until the second month of the season. But here they've lost to three quality teams, playoff teams, right? So this is the toughest stretch of the season for them, and they've fallen at Philadelphia, of course, to their arch rival Baltimore, and then again against the Chiefs on Christmas Day.
You know, that sucked, to be blunt. Not the type of ball we want to play, and really kind of eerily similar to our last performance in that we're not doing the fundamental things well enough. We're turning the ball over. We're not getting turnovers, and that hadn't been a recipe for us, but it has been of late. You're minus two or whatever we were in this game, and you're not giving yourself a chance, particularly turning the ball over in the red zone.
First of all, you know, we just have to play cleaner. You know, that's gonna be the first part. I think the second part is we have to study the film, see where we're doing things really well. There's some moments. I mean, we scored a touchdown, got called back. You know, just those things that happen. You know, in key situations, and then I think at the end of the day, you know, you know, there's gonna be adversity in every season, and it comes in different spaces and places and different times. I'm betting on our guys and who we are and how we're going to respond.
I appreciate that. They have to, and they certainly have the tools. They were over 200 yards rushing in this game, which is a big deal, especially against a Chiefs defense that has been pretty stingy against the run a good portion of the season. So, yeah, I feel like these games are not necessarily always indicative of what we could see from the teams once they get through kind of these wonky holiday schedules. I hate the holiday schedules that force teams – it's going to be the best teams with the superstars to play three games in 11 days. To me, and I know life is not fair, I'll qualify it that way, that is not fair. It's not fair to do, and yet we see the Chiefs have surged while the Steelers have stalled. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So in the AFC North, both those teams have clinched, the Ravens and Steelers, but neither team has locked up the division title yet. We know the Bills have already won the AFC East, the Texans the AFC South, but they've dropped back-to-back games and have not looked good. And honestly, I think the schedule is partly to blame for it. The way that they have had to navigate this schedule, plus losing Tank Dell, for those of you who were watching their game against Kansas City, so not the one against the Ravens on Christmas Day, but at Kansas City. Going back to Saturday, we had gotten to our Airbnb in Little Rock after driving nearly 24 hours, and we tuned into the game. I was able to find a stream of it on TV at the Airbnb, and the emotion pouring out of CJ Stroud as he's crying over the injury to Tank Dell in the back of the end zone. So yeah, it was a huge loss for them. And maybe if you're watching the Texans on Christmas Day, you're thinking they have not recovered from that. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's actually the case. They haven't yet recovered because, Tank had to stay at the University of Kansas Medical Center overnight following that knee injury that clearly has taken him out for the rest of the year and maybe most of next year. We'll see. When your quarterback is sobbing on the sidelines and when guys are visibly shaken, it's really hard. Forget getting them back out there on the field where they can even try to compete in that game. But how about having to turn around after this emotional letdown and just a mess and everything it takes out of you and having to play just a few days later? Not every team can handle that. The Chiefs are doing better with it. The Steelers, I mean, they're out there, but their offense has stalled. It's not like what it was when Russell Wilson first got on the field. But they're now through this stretch. Can they recover? That's going to be the big story. We know in the AFC West, the Chiefs obviously have clinched that number one seed, which is a massive advantage for them because they know how to use it. Arrowhead is a very difficult place to play, especially in the cold, if it happens to be cold. And then you've got Chargers and Broncos. So there are still, right now, two more playoff spots up for grabs. With Chargers and Broncos at 9-6, they're the leaders in the clubhouse, so to speak. Then you've got the Colts and the Dolphins and the Bengals, who are all 7-8. Those are your teams that are still alive. should the Chargers and Broncos take care of business? They're obviously in the driver's seat with the winning records, and so they could end up clinching as we head through this week 17. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We also saw on Thursday night, it wasn't the start of week 17, but it kind of where people are used to watching football, and it was bad. I hope you did not tune in to Seahawks Bears, or if you did, it wasn't your primary focus, because this was, as bad as it's been for Chicago, this was the worst offensive performance of the season. 7 sacks of Caleb Williams. He was, well, he and the Bears, it's not just him, averaging 1.3 yards per completion. 1.3 yards. Only one pass that went downfield more than 10 yards, and of course just the 3 points. I mean, this is, it's awful. It's gone from bad to worse now with a 10 game losing skid, and I know there are Chicago Bears fans out there that are hoping for anything that might turn this ship around. Rich is listening in Chicago. Rich, what do you think about the Bears after watching Thursday night?
I didn't watch it, actually. I'm driving back from Iowa. I have a box truck company, and I'm doing a delivery, so.
Gotcha.
But I'm glad I didn't watch it. It sounded very, very, very exciting, to say the least. But, no, man, I tell you, the offense, they just, we need a real good play caller. And Ben Johnson might be the guy, but can he coach the team? That's what I'm worried about, you know, because he could be a great offensive coordinator, but who's to say he can't control the team or coach the team? You know what I'm saying?
Well, right. He doesn't have a lot of experience, though he will likely get a job for sure. I mean, he'll likely, like he was in the top candidate in the hiring cycle a year ago, that he's going to end up being in that same space again this year. And he decided he wanted to stay with the Lions, right? Because they had unfinished business. And so the Lions' success has only made him even more attractive. So I feel like he's going to be one of the candidates for however many openings there are. There'll be a scramble to interview him. And you're right, he has no head coaching experience, but that won't stop some team from hiring him. What do you think about the Pete Carroll reports that he and the Bears have mutual interest?
Well, I love the fact that he's got all that experience, but it worries me because the Super Bowl, when he threw that pass on the goal line, cost him the Super Bowl instead of running it. It kind of reminds me of the way the Bears are right now, play calling wise. So it's kind of like scary. It's like, you know, I love Carroll, I do, but I just, you know what I'm saying? We've seen so much of this stuff, all this crap of these bad play calling, you know? You know what I'm saying?
I do. I mean, that was one moment. They also won a Super Bowl. And you're right. He's since acknowledged that that was the wrong thing to do. And obviously, Marshawn Lynch was on that team and could have potentially punched that ball in. I know Pete Carroll's explanation is we were trying to waste a play and take more time off the clock so Tom Brady had no time left with the football. But it went so completely and horribly wrong. But he is a Super Bowl winning coach. He had great success in college as well. He has a lot of energy. He reminds me of a Jim Harbaugh, kind of an older version of a Jim Harbaugh. But man, if Bill Belichick can go to North Carolina and light the college football world on fire, I don't know why Pete Carroll can't coach again.
Yep, my wife and I, if they would have just punched it in, we would have won $4,000 on a square.
Oh, no.
it cost us $4,000, so, but.
In other words, you'll never forget it. Never forget it.
Yeah, I'll never forget it. And, but, you know, if they do hire Carroll, who is he going to get as the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator? We had the one guy that was his offensive coordinator already. So, I mean, do you have any inkling on who he would maybe bring in?
I don't, because here's how it goes a lot of times when you're talking about hiring, especially in the NFL, where it's a much smaller fraternity than, say, college. You get a guy that's hired. Often, he's already been thinking about who he might want to bring along with him. It'll be guys that he worked with in the past, maybe other assistant coaches that he he kind of grew up with, guys that he trusts. That's the deal. When you're running into a situation or you're stepping into a situation where you're unfamiliar, or if you're a first-time head coach, you're usually going to bring along guys that you're comfortable with and you know how they work. They know how you work. So until you know who the head coach is, it's kind of hard to know. But here's the thing. People are going to be scrambling to work with Caleb Williams. That I know to be true.
Right.
And I'm sure you've watched the Bears a ton this season. I know this game was god-awful, but he was under pressure a lot of the times. No doubt he's getting a little antsy back there. I mean, it's just human nature when you're constantly under siege. And, you know, the receivers don't have time to get separation because the pressure is coming so quickly. The run game has not been there consistently the way that it was in the beginning of the year, in large part because of the offensive line. And so it's gone from bad to worse. But as you point out, there's really no one calling plays right now. And Thomas Brown is not meant to be a head coach, at least not at this point in his career. So it's almost like the Bears ownership just pulled the plug and said, go ahead, you're on your own the rest of the year. We're going to go ahead and work on our next head coach. And it's clear that's where their focus is now, even though this is really painful for fans. I'm not sure the front office is even focused on what's happening for the rest of the season.
Right. I kind of like Vrabel.
Yeah, he's tough. He could fit a Chicago lifestyle, Chicago type of mentality.
Right, I believe so. Maybe he could get Ron Rivera to be the defensive coach.
Oh, or I love
Lovie
Ron.
Lovie Smith, what the hell, right? Lovie Smith?
Could you imagine back to Chicago?
That would be crazy, right?
Well, and you need someone who can navigate what is now the toughest division in football. That's the thing, is the NFC North just went boom into the toughest division in football.
Now, ever since the Bears let go of Lovie Smith, the culture in the Bears locker room and everywhere, you know, has been, that's what they pretty much crap.
Yeah, so, definitely needs identity, needs a direction. I feel like they're kind of a ship without a rudder. And so they need someone who's got a strong personality, which is why Pete Carroll might not be a bad idea. I mean, we saw the way he changed Seattle and changed its culture, not to mention USC when he was there as well. So and the Patriots, people forget he actually had a winning record the year he got fired by New England.
Right, right. And one last thing before I let you go. Why did the Bears get Swift? Why didn't they go after Barkley or Henry? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, I think it's maybe the same question Cowboys fans are asking about why they couldn't go after Derrick Henry, especially in light of what's happening right now. So, agree with you. It's kind of, maybe it's price, maybe it's about them being out of the price range, or just other teams more attractive in terms of the winning. But I kind of feel like with Caleb Williams, there was a split. There were some people who weren't sure he was going to pan out. Now it's pretty clear that he's got all the tools, but just it's been a mess, obviously. The leadership, the coaching, they got to get that figured out.
Well, I wanted to start off by saying, Houston, we have a problem. You're in Houston.
yes, I am.
Anyways, I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Merry Christmas, Rich. Good to have you with us. It's one of the longest phone calls and exchanges you'll hear. But it's good. It's good to be able to give an outlet to fans who are slightly frustrated. And it's that time of the year. Either your team is going to the playoffs, and actually, even if your team is going to the playoffs, there can be a bunch of frustration with injuries and just the way the team is playing. Or it's the opposite. You're already focused on the upcoming offseason, the hiring process, maybe even draft and free agency. Because hope springs eternal. Let's see, what do I want to do next? Well, we mentioned the NFC North and the battle between the Vikings and the Packers. And so we'll get to that at the back half of the hour, because that's a huge game coming up in Week 17. Probably the marquee game outside of, I mean, we didn't get Ravens, Texans as a real good contest. And also Chiefs and Steelers, they kind of slogged it out through the middle of the game, though. No, those are all playoff teams, the four that we got on Christmas Day. But I would say Vikings-Packers has got a lot of intrigue associated with it. Two of the better teams in the NFC, and of course the NFL. And Packers, I don't think, are a surprise. Vikings are definitely a surprise with the way that they have catapulted at the start of, the J.J. McCarthy era, where there's no J.J. McCarthy yet. The start of the Sam Darnold era. Also, if you've not heard the comments from, should we say he's retiring? I don't know if he's actually retiring, but he's leaving Miami. Jim Larrañaga, who has been the head coach at Miami for over a decade, but also has been in college basketball for almost 50 years. He's walking away. Wait until you hear his reasons why. So we'll get to those two for sure. Those two topics in sports that kind of caught my attention. Also, I have another couple of stories for you from the holidays. In the After Hours Super Secret Pillow Fort at A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Let me know how you're listening. Good to connect with you. Hope you had a great Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Happy holidays to you. Hope you're enjoying your time with family and friends, and obviously a ton of football. The NFL has made sure of that. Plus college football with more of the college football playoff games coming up. We were in Little Rock on Saturday for a rest after about 24 hours, 22-ish hours in the car, 24 hours from the time we had left our home in New Jersey on our way to Texas. And so we got to Little Rock in time for the college football playoff game between Texas and Clemson. And then, of course, that was followed by the late game with Georgia. And so the college football playoff is getting great traction. I know people are excited about the expanded playoff, and yet there will be questions regarding the competitive nature of it, because we're not sure. We're not sure that it can be competitive with that many teams involved. So that's a debate that many will have. But here's the deal. They're not going to backpedal, just like we've seen the NFL move to a Christmas Day schedule, where even if Christmas is on a Wednesday, oh, well, who cares if our teams are playing? Some of our teams are playing three games in 11 days. What does that matter? Well, college football playoff may actually expand to 14 teams before long. Why? Because the power conferences know they make more money. The more that they can add to the playoff, the more that they can charge their advertisers and their broadcast partners money for these games. And so they're raking in the revenue hand over fist, which means they're not going to backpedal. Okay, so here are some of the numbers, and I know the network's a little wonky, but here are the numbers for the college football playoff. And this was the rollout, right? The very beginning of this 12-team format. SMU and Penn State, that was 6.4 million viewers, which, by the way, is more than what the NBA did on Christmas Day. So that game was on TNT. Now, compare with Texans and Chiefs on NBC, that was 15.5 million viewers. So you can see the discrepancy still. Even though it's a Saturday, you can see how the NFL is the bully that really does drive the bus. Now, Clemson, Texas had 8.6 million viewers on TNT. That's compared with 15.4 million for Steelers and Ravens on Fox. You also had Indiana Notre Dame on Friday night. That was a huge get for college football, 13.4 million. And then Tennessee Ohio State Saturday night, when there was no NFL, 14.3 million. Okay, so that shows you football fans in the United States are splitting their viewership, of course. College football is more of a regional sport. I'm not telling you it isn't popular in many parts of the country, but up against the NFL, really no other sport can compete. So the average for the four playoff games in college football was 10.6 million viewers, and that was terrific. But what you got up against the NFL was decidedly less than what you got when there were no NFL games. And here's the challenge is that some of these games were lopsided, right? Penn State dominated SMU, regardless of score. So don't look at score. Tennessee had, that's not the game I was going to go to next. I was going to say Notre Dame really was able to dominate Indiana as well. And despite score, Ohio State kind of manhandled Tennessee too. So is 12 teams going to be competitive? Maybe not. We talk about this in the NFL, where we've seen an expanded playoff. If the NFL has its way, they would add even more teams, which stinks. Stop it. Stop adding more teams and watering down the playoffs. But that's what's happening. College football's not going back. We're not going to see the NFL backpedal either. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So we get to our Airbnb at Little Rock, and we're watching college football and NFL. We're kind of going back and forth between laptop and the smart TV that was there at the Airbnb. This is after we've cleaned up dog poop and pee. Oh my gosh. We weren't even inside 5 minutes before the dog decided she would poop on the carpet. Let's hope the owner of the Airbnb is not listening as I tell this story. Anyway, we end up getting to Texas. We've driven nearly 2,000 miles by the time we come first to Houston and then over to Temple. For those of you who know Texas, it's about an hour north of Austin. So we end up taking that trip as well on Sunday night to get to my mother-in-law's home. So the big family Christmas on my husband's side was Christmas Eve. We had a bunch of prep and we're spending time with family over there. Anyway, by the time we get to Monday morning, Princess Leia, my vehicle, has gone 2,000 miles from the time we left New Jersey. And yet, I had a very important reason to get back in the car on Monday and drive another 3 hours round trip. And I will admit, I was really nervous because I had to go around Austin. So I went south around Austin and was making a stop in the area of San Marcos. That's how they say it locally. I would say San Marcos. My husband corrected me. Around here, people say San Marcos. Anyway, I was going south. Again, for those of you who know your Texas geography, I had to go visit the San Marcos Animal Shelter. I had found a rescue organization operating in this part of Texas. And initially, because we're still looking to adopt another dog, I had found a dog that I thought might be a good fit for our family. And what I found on any of these websites, Pet Finder, some of the websites with the major rescue organizations, even if they're based in the Northeast, so often they are drawing dogs and cats from Texas and from Alabama and from parts of the South. And in Texas, unfortunately, I mean, I understand the reasoning behind it, but it does break my heart. Every animal shelter in the state of Texas is a kill shelter. Eventually, because they just cannot keep the number of animals that are being surrendered or that are being found, being rescued. And so they will keep them as long as they can. But we're talking about city shelters that are on city money. And so if they can't find homes for the dogs or rescue organizations for the dogs, they end up having to euthanize them, which just breaks my heart. And so I had found a lady online through Pet Finder who was trying to find homes for dogs out of Texas. And the one that I initially found wasn't good with cats, had too high of a prey drive, and I don't want my cat Sugar to have to fear for her life in her home. And so instead, this lady, her name's Jan, was trying to connect me with, you know, different animal shelters. Hey, check out these websites, see if you find a dog there that you think might be a good fit. I came across a dog named Flower. All I know about Flower is that she's an Aussie mix. She looks more like a German Shepherd to me, but an Aussie mix, kind of medium sized. She was surrendered by her owner. So she had a home. Her owner got evicted, was becoming homeless. I hope he has found a new place to live, but was going to a homeless shelter and could not take the dog. So he ends up dropping the dog at this animal shelter in San Marcos. And I found her online. She'd been there about 2.5 months and real timid type of a dog in that atmosphere. Once I visited there on Monday, I understood why. Two enormous buildings full of dogs barking. And you know, the bigger dogs, they have the really, well, huskies, my gosh, huskies sing the entire time, sing and howl. It's just a tough situation. They don't have enough volunteers to be able to walk the dogs. And so according to the woman who I met there on Monday, sometimes these dogs don't get out of their cages more than once or twice a week. And they're doing the best they can, but that's not an optimal situation. So Flower was allowed into the yard, initially pretty timid. But once she got out and got some fresh air and started to get more active and running around, I was able to pet her. Very sweet dog. And she just captured my heart. So I am going to get her on Friday, leaving Houston, will drive to San Marcos to pick her up. They've been holding her for me, although it's not generally how animal shelters do it. I couldn't take her on Monday because we had a huge house full of people and my mother-in-law's, and I just felt like that might not be the right situation for her. They were kind enough to take her out of her cage for the week and keep her in the office space so that they could give her a little more of a quiet atmosphere. I guess she's had a really hard time there. Just, it's been rough with all the bigger dogs and all the noise and stuff. And so she desperately needs a home. I'm the first person who was there to visit her and see her and has been interested in adopting her. And I can't wait. She captured my heart immediately. By the time I had to leave, she had spent a little more time with me. She actually came up to me a few times and just wagging her tail and so thankful for human interaction. So I can't wait to be able to adopt her. It'll be our Christmas puppy. I'm not sure if we're going to change her name or not. We're still talking about that. But yeah, the opportunity to take a dog out of a situation like that just makes me feel real good about us adopting her, but also a good connection with her right away. So a lot of you have asked me, is there another dog? Are you still working on fostering a dog or trying to find a dog for your family? Yes, we are. And we found one and we're taking her back with us we'll leave next week, taking her back with us to the New Jersey area next week. So it'll be two dogs in the back seat of the car. I've never done that before, but we're really excited. She desperately needs a home and it seems like a real good fit. No issues with dogs or cats. Just, yeah, needs to get out of that shelter, and we're going to do that. So thank you for asking. I'll share pictures when I've got them. Oh, she'll need a bath right away. I hope you're enjoying your holiday week. Coming up, Jim Larranaga explains why he is leaving Miami basketball in the middle of a season, even though he's got more than a decade invested. Powerful comments from the longtime college basketball coach. At A-Law Radio to find me online, also on our Facebook page. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
I love the game and I love the university that much. I felt like, okay, there's one thing you got to constantly ask yourself. Are you going to give everything you have the commitment that it deserves? 100% of yourself, physically, mentally, emotionally, but I'm exhausted.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of one Jim Larranaga, who's been on our show more than once, and you could say, well, he's old. And that would be dismissing him out of hand without really listening to what it is that he's saying. And yeah, he turned 75 in October, and he held a press conference at Miami on Thursday to explain that even though he still loves basketball, and even though he enjoys coaching after a half century in the game, he's decided to leave Miami in the middle of a season. I mean, that's drastic. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You hear him say he's exhausted. Well, there's a reason why. It's not just about being on the sidelines. In fact, if it was only about being on the sidelines, I don't want to speak for Coach, but I dare say this would not be an issue. Instead, he's talking about stepping away from a world of college sports that he no longer recognizes. And he goes back to kind of the moment where he understood that the world he grew up in college basketball has completely changed.
I've tried every which way to keep this going. And I know I'm going to be asked a lot of questions, but I want to answer them before I'm even asked. What shocked me beyond belief was after we made it to the Final Four, just 18 months ago, the very first time I met with the players, eight of them decided they were going to put their name in the portal and leave. I said, don't you like it yet? No, I love it. I love Miami. It's great. But the opportunity to make money someplace else created a situation that you have to begin to ask yourself as a coach, what is this all about? And the answer is it's become professional.
This is a discussion that is happening all over college sports. In fact, we talked about this before I took our break, our holiday break. In fact, you may remember, and many of you weighed in on our social media. I was asking you, in light of some, what was a public plea on social media from the athletic director at Alabama of all places, asking fans to donate money to their school's NIL fund to help buy better athletes and buy better players. Alabama's not alone in this. There's a poll, a study that was done recently about fans slash boosters slash supporters around the country and how many of them in pretty much every state in the U.S., they are chipping in so that their favorite football team or their favorite basketball team can pay players more money. Now, right now, it's considered NIL. Essentially, it's compensation for the use of a name, image, and likeness of a player. But what it's become, what it's devolved into, is a thinly veiled pay-for-play scheme. And because there is no regulation, because the NCAA can't even pretend to keep up with it, it's the Wild Wild West. I hear these crazy stories, and we've heard guys like Bill Belichick talk about it. Nick Saban, that's probably the reason he stepped away. Roy Williams, though, was a few years at North Carolina. How about a more recent example? Tony Bennett at Virginia, right before the season tips off. And now you've got Jim Larrañaga, 53 freaking years in college basketball. He's been in place at Miami and has had great success at Miami since he took over in 2011. They've been to a half dozen tournaments, 4 Sweet 16 appearances, and they made that Final Four run last year. And what happened after they made the Final Four run? Half his team, more than half his team, hit the transfer portal because they could make more money elsewhere. It's become that drastic. Jim went on to say they're a great group of kids. It's not their problem. It's the system or the lack of a system. I didn't know how to navigate through this. And so he's doing what he believes is the right thing for Miami, for the right thing for his players. But as much as people will tell you, and it's a fairly common refrain among analysts and insiders and people who are in college sports, even Bill Belichick said this when he took over at North Carolina. The kids deserve to get some compensation because the college conferences are getting rich off these revenue sports, primarily, not only, but primarily football and basketball, and in some cases now women's college basketball. The system that has emerged since NIL has become a monster, where schools are having to pay upwards of $10+ million for a quarterback. That's quality. And what is this doing? Well, it's creating major separation between the haves and the have-nots. We know at North Carolina, just because the process has had a microscope on it since Belichick was hired, they are poised to spend more than $20 million on their college football roster. He's dealing with agents and contracts. And Jim Larrañaga expanded on that as well. That whole process, he says, it's made his sport unrecognizable.
At this point, after 53 years, I just didn't feel like that I could successfully navigate this whole new world that I was dealing with. Because my conversations were ridiculous with an agent saying to me, well, you can get involved if you're willing to go to $1.1 million. I'm like, what? $1 million? And that be the norm? That was the norm. Like, you're talking to people that expect $1 million for playing college basketball. So for those guys, and God bless them, that can handle that, that can work through it, that the schools that can figure out a way to either put so much money to it or figure out a way that you can live with less. But I talk to a lot of my friends, and they're having all the same problems I'm having. How long they will last, it's anybody's guess.
He he says that it's ridiculous, and he gets passionate, and you can still hear Jim Larranaga, the one we see on the sidelines, the one who loves basketball, the one who is still able to coach a team, put a team together, bring a team along, create a winning culture, a winning program. That guy, he's throwing in the towel because this is ridiculous. And he doesn't know how to deal with this. Now, just as a side note, this is why you've got all of the major college athletic departments hiring general managers. Remember Bill Belichick? I'm just using this because it's a more recent example where the top's been pulled back a little bit so you can kind of see how the sausage is made. And I don't know that we're going to like it, just like we wouldn't with sausage. But he brought in a general manager with him, a guy that he knew and worked with at the Patriots. And now that's what's happening. At the college level, you've got to have a general manager who can navigate contracts and agents and the amount of money that is allotted to them, that they're available, that's available for them to spend. And this idea of players, it's more agents than players, but pitting schools against each other. And that's what Jim is saying. He's heard from agents. If you can give us $1.1 million, well, then you'll be in the conversation. I understand why it's exhausting for coaches at any age and any level when all you want to do is coach basketball. And I always thought that college sports was kind of tough because of the recruiting aspect. But it's not really recruiting anymore, is it? You're not recruiting kids that you think will fit based on the number of scholarships you've got and the type of personality you want for your team. No, now you have to go into it with dollar amounts and dollar signs and what you're prepared to spend. And he's got the perfect example and how it was so disheartening. 8 players who all told him they were really happy at Miami, but they entered the transfer portal anyway, right on the heels of a Final Four. How often do we see that happen in pro sports? Teams get to a championship game, they win a championship like a Super Bowl or a World Series, and they want to get paid. They want to capitalize on the success of their team and their names being out there, the popularity of their particular run, or just the fact that they were on national TV a lot more. What they're looking for is to capitalize on kind of this flash in the pan 15 minutes of fame. Hey, this is the pinnacle. We went to the Final Four. Let's see how much money we can make off our run to the Final Four or in the Super Bowl, right? Guys give up everything for the good of the team and the championship, and then they want to get paid individually in a new free agent contract. It's sad. It's sad that we're losing some of the best coaches in the game, football and basketball, because the landscape is, as Jim Larranaga calls it, ridiculous. But he's just the latest example, and I appreciate that he's willing to share why he's exhausted and what's happening behind the scenes. 1 hour to go from the After Hours super secret home base in Houston. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.